Hi, everyone. Welcome to Two Bald Guys Talking Safety. I'm Langdon DeMint.
And I'm Julian Taylor.
And welcome to our podcast.
Welcome back to Two Bald Guys Talking Safety and our conversation with Matt Gibson.
I wanted to sort of touch on two other things, one of which was, because I know you do training and I know you like to use things like Lego. So I was just really interested to dip into, I'm assuming there's some elements in there around communication and these kind of things. Some of the things that you think are really important when it comes to, we talked about culture, some of the things that you think are really important in terms of developing a team, a workforce around those areas like communication.
Yeah, I think so. I do training's part of what I do, both kind of independent training and also kind of training through these kind of projects in terms of bringing kind of the organization together. And kind of games like that kind of help to kind of illustrate some of those kind of principles about how things can go so much better and can really improve, yeah, the communication with people. I particularly like Lego because kind of it enables you to kind of be able to see a process, something actually happening. You're building something, and one of the big challenges, obviously, is as we talked about, is the fact that you want these things to go quickly, and quite often when people associate things going quickly with things being less safe, things being out of control, And I think my wife was just saying to me yesterday, more haste, yes, less speed. You need to slow down. I think what some of these games and this training can really help to illustrate is the fact that when you fully understand what you're doing, you are able to do things quickly and get them finished quickly without having to rush and without having to increase the danger in those kind of situations. And you've already introduced sporting analogies. I've got a lot of people in my organization actually really like motor racing. And that's a great example of the fact you can make things go faster and be significantly safer. We love watching some of the videos of some of the pit stops in the 1930s, IndyCar pit stops of people kind of trying to take a wheel off. They're smacking a kind of a wheel wrench with a sledgehammer and eventually managing to get maybe a couple of wheels changed in about a minute. And you'll see some of the top Formula One teams coming in and replicating that. And within a couple of seconds, they can change every single wheel on a car and the whole thing just looks safe and it looks controlled. It looks calm. Nobody looks like they're rushing. Because they fundamentally understand the thing that they're doing. They're very well practiced at the thing that they're doing. And they've removed all of those obstacles, all of that waste away from the situation. What they've managed to do is effectively is not by making anything go necessarily specifically a lot faster. They've just removed all of those things that you don't need to happen. You've taken all that waste and just enabled you to be able to just, in a controlled way, move through quickly.
And they've got a process, haven't they? When you look at it, they've got a really well-defined, really well-practiced process for doing it. We went to see a comedian the other day. I'm just going to go completely off at a tangent here. But the joke that made me laugh most was he was talking about Formula One teams, and he said, I want to be the jackman. He said, you look at that guy, he said, all he does is he walks out, he puts the jack under, and he goes, boom. And then he goes, boom, and then he walks back in again. And he was working out how much time he actually spent working in a year based on actually 3-4 seconds to raise the car, lower it again, and then go back in. He said, you might have two pit stops in a race, two drivers, so you got 4 pit stops, and he's doing it for X number of seconds. And he basically worked out this guy was working about 10 minutes in a year and earning £150,000. And I thought it was just that was my joke of the evening. I want to be the jackman on a Formula One team. So that's my complete tangent for today.
You know, but something I think to that, there's a level of what we talk about all the time, you know, Jules, and you think about the whole transition of human organizational performance from BBS, for example, or looking at failures, how do we reallocate SIF focus? They've also learned how to minimize errors, streamline the capacity to manage controls, so when failures do happen, they're really minimal. I mean, that's crucial, and I think a lot of what, to me, when Matt was talking, that I just started kind of thinking in my mind, I started pinpointing straight to that. I was like, well, that's it's basically the minimization of failures. I mean, obviously that's essence, but you know, a theme that I think is very applicable that we overlook a lot of times.
Well, I know one thing you talked about, Matt, was learning from failure, wasn't it? And I know you got a couple of experiences that you wanted to pick up on that in terms of things almost inevitably will go wrong at one time or another. So it's what do we learn from it?
Absolutely. I think one of the things I've found in my career from both the safety perspective, but just generally in terms of a learning perspective, is actually when things go wrong, that is the most valuable time for learning if you're open to do it. And certainly some of the biggest kind of moments in my career in terms of my overall kind of learning as an engineer have come when things have gone badly and when things have gone wrong and when we've been able to understand what's been happening and therefore learn from that event and learn from that failure. And therefore you've got that real understanding of it, and it's imprinted in you and therefore really influences your behavior going forward. So I guess kind of working in a high hazard industry, it's those ability to be able to have those experiences, which certainly influenced my career. I was really lucky that about a year into my career, only a few miles down the road, there was a very serious refinery explosion. But it was incredibly fortunate that it happened at shift change on a bank holiday. And therefore, there was almost nobody injured. In fact, there was only two very minor injuries happen, one of which was actually off-site when somebody's door slammed and hurt them in a local village because it was that big an explosion, and somebody else had some minor injuries on the site. But so very, very lucky that they had very low kind of personal injury impact, but there was a huge impact on the refinery. And one of the things that they did brilliantly is actually their fire chief invited people from the local industry around to go and see, look, this is what actually happened. And this is quite how serious these things can go wrong if you get it wrong in our kind of industry. And just being able to look at some of that mangled metal that was happening, and just the impact on buildings that were hundreds and hundreds of meters away, really stuck in my head about this is what can happen if I get things wrong in my career, and this is something I really need to learn from. So incredibly fortunate I was able to learn in that circumstance from somebody else's mistake, because they were so open to be able to showing and describing what can happen. And it's those kind of low frequency but very high consequence events are very very easy to ignore sometimes and not fully understand, and being able to get an experience like that was certainly very impactful for me in terms of my career.
I mean, we talked about culture earlier, haven't we? And it's creating that culture where actually people are open. I mean, that's a really good example to hear, where they were open to sharing with other people what had happened. It's the black box thinking approach, isn't it? The difference between, I suppose, medicine and aeronautical, where in medicine, because of the sort of legal culture around people, if something goes wrong, people hide things. And you've got to work the opposite way, where you create that aeronautical culture where it's one of always wanting to learn. And something's gone wrong, we always learn from it. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think they were very brave, and they were obviously very much not wanting to talk about the specific incident. But the one thing they knew that they could do was share the impact that this kind of thing could happen. And then that and being able to share that impact was incredibly helpful and useful for the organizations.
Well, you know, and to me, that's not even, that's more than, I mean, it is the essence, the root of culture, but that's big, because I can think of, you know, there's a lot of companies that have had catastrophic failures, right? And how many of them are open to sharing more, not just, I mean, you know, here in the States, you have CSB, Chemical Safety Board, if it's an explosion, yeah, they'll come in, they do their investigation. But outside of that, a lot of times people are, you know, they don't want it known. And even if it was multiple failures, there wasn't really one route. There were multiple, you know, a series of events that led to it. They want it hush. And opposed, sure, because even if it was, you know, think of the Imperial Sugar Factory fire, you think of Deepwater Horizon, all these, it really wasn't one. It was multiple events that led to it. Well, that's, how often do we overlook little simple things that actually can be magnified. And that to me is when you, that's a, you were talking about that story earlier, and that was something that I think a lot could honestly learn from.
Absolutely. It's very rarely one thing that goes wrong, isn't it? It's that in every kind of incident that happens, there will have been a whole number of barriers to that which will have failed. It will have to pass through a whole number of different protective layers for that thing to have happened. And it just is taken a kind of a small error or a small problem in each one of those. And it's understanding that and understanding the impact is the key for learning, isn't it?
We watched we did an episode, didn't we, on Bhopal. And I mean, when you look at that, it was just a number of dominoes and they all happened to fall over at the same time. And sort of that's what sort of brought the outcome about. And I thought what was really interesting, Matt, from what you're saying there is just that recognition. I think a lot of younger people would really benefit from it, is that this is the potential of what could have happened. I mean, Langdon talks about potential all the time, and it's getting people to recognize the potential of what you're working with or playing with, isn't it? That's sort of there. I know there was one other, and I know we've had Stephen Kirby on as a guest previously, and I know you were working as part of the management team on that site when that happened as well. And I think it's really good that you're open to sort of reflecting on that from your perspective as well, because there are always, we know there are two sides to every story. So I'm sort of interested in your thoughts on that incident as well.
Yeah, that was another one. I mean, in terms of which had a real big impact on me in terms of understanding how to deal with things. So the incident with Stephen Kirby, if those who've not listened to that particular podcast, definitely worth listening to. Stephen was involved in a pressure test of a water main, and the pressure test went wrong, and the bung from that flew out of the end of the pipe, taking Stephen with him and flushing him out of a trench. He was very fortunately not too heavily seriously injured. It could have been a lot worse. So there was a whole lot of systematic failures in terms of how that thing went wrong, which needed to be learned from. And yeah, as you mentioned, I was part of kind of the management team on the part of the organization which was looking after that particular activity. And it took us a lot of soul searching in terms of really understanding what was going on in that incident, because we were, as a site, we had a whole lot of experience around pressure testing. It was something we did basically on a daily basis. So we were pretty confident that we knew what we were doing, and we had all the controls and the processes in place to be able to do that. I didn't recognize or remember any kind of a pressure testing failure. And we were doing things which were probably significantly higher pressure than the one that was there. But there was a few things that started to change. And Langdon mentioned earlier about when things change, that's when you need to really think about things. So there was a few things that were different about that particular circumstance. One, pretty much all the pressure testing we were doing was on metal pipe, and this was a plastic pipe, which suddenly started to change a few things. It changed some things just actually from a physical point of view, but it also changed things, more importantly, actually organizationally. It shifted the responsibility from one part of the organization to a different part of the organization. Also, again, because it was kind of an underground water pipe, again, a different part of the organization were involved in the construction of that, and a different part of the organization actually undertook part of the testing. So you were just starting to kind of take away some of those controls. So that thing that we thought we understood very well how to do, just a few different changes in the organization, a few different changes in process, an extra subcontractor that started to get involved that wouldn't normally get involved. And suddenly all that good things and all that confidence that we had in our process shouldn't really have been there, because the opportunities for those things to fail suddenly were significantly increased. And so really kind of understanding what we were doing from an organizational point of view, and how we were probably a little complacent about that particular activity because of how familiar we were with the activity. But those different changes that had taken place allowed those barriers effectively to collapse, those things and those protective layers that we had in place to be able to fall over, and unfortunately for that incident to happen. So certainly a really big one. And again, because you were able to witness what could have happened in that and quite how serious that was, had a really real big impact on me in terms of understanding how critical some of these process understanding is, and being able to control the way that you do things in a really critical way.
Well, you know, and that's we talk start, win, save, another, you know, very important aspect to SIFs and others, honestly, just every day. How many times do companies, do people think they have started, win, save? And just what you said, little changes, somebody else coming on site, somebody else doing a different process. Even if you think you, each piece is, if that transitions and that wasn't the original design of the process, you think you are, but you're not. I mean, that's scary.
The other question I always have is, and I'm going to ask it again, I mean, up in Edinburgh this week, talking at a conference, and the question I always ask, I'm to the point of boring people, is when did you last see the job stop because of a safety concern? And I suppose it's creating that, when you talk about culture, it's creating that kind of culture where people have that confidence to say stop. I mean, it's interesting, we had a guest on just the other week who was a health and safety guy and said when he was working on a fairly major project, because of his character and the sort of situation he was in, he didn't feel capable of saying stop, that's quite a scary place to be. And I suppose it'd be interesting to hear any reflections on that, Matt, in terms of on a turnaround, particularly when you've got millions of dollars at stake or millions of pounds at stake. Do you see the job getting stopped because people have safety concerns?
I think it very much depends on the culture of that organization and quite how secure that culture of being able to stop and being able to challenge actually really is. So I see some very good organizations where that is a kind of a mature fundamental within their organization, and they will absolutely do that. And people feel kind of encouraged, empowered to be able to do that. Other organizations that maybe much, we talked about people on their safety journey. It's fundamentally different. I was on a turnaround this year doing a safety tour with a fantastic kind of safety advisor. And we were challenging a whole number of different people about various things. And we were kind of trying to advise some of the contractors in terms of being able to do some stuff a little bit more safely. And then we actually went and challenged some of the staff about how maybe they should be thinking about doing something a little bit different as well. And it ended up in a confrontational kind of argument where they kind of were seriously challenging us in terms of our why have we got the right to challenge them? And it became quite an interesting confrontation. It really kind of gave a real highlight into the underlying culture of the organization.
It's interesting just listening to you there. It kind of triggered me, which was thinking you do have to proactively build that culture, don't you, where you say, actually, we want people to challenge and be confident to challenge. And again, when you think about cost, it's even that's short-sighted, isn't it? Because if something goes wrong on the kind of plants you're working on, actually, even the billions of dollars start to fade into insignificance, don't they, if something goes badly wrong?
Absolutely. The biggest thing I see causing delays in a turnaround is when something goes wrong, either a safety incident or just another kind of engineering error. That is by far and away is going to have the biggest impact on the event. So you might stop something, and that's going to cause maybe a couple of minutes delay. You can have a conversation around it. If something goes wrong, all the delays you're going to be talking in days, and a kind of a whole order of magnitude kind of different. So being able to build that culture where people are kind of properly able to just think and challenge and do things a little bit differently and kind of get ourselves like kind of slightly out of our in a different mindset to be able to do that's really really important.
From your perspective, what are some of the key things people should be thinking about in terms of trying to drive better safety performance in your world?
In my world, I think it starts off with good understanding where you really are and being really honest about where you are as an organization with your safety culture. And because the people I get most concerned about is where they are not aware of where they are and not aware of the improvement that they need to make. And once you become aware of that, then you're on a positive journey to be able to improve. So yeah, being really honest about yourself as to where you are and how safe your organization is, I think it's the first kind of top tip. And then it's about, I mean, in my world, it's about planning, it's about organization and kind of and communication. So giving yourself the opportunity to be able to understand what you're doing and the activities you're undertaking, and to be able to plan them, and to wherever you can in a team environment, kind of practice and rehearse the activities that are being undertaken. And that's so much more powerful in a team environment. So we spend a lot of time kind of helping organizations and bringing them together, kind of all the different stakeholders that are involved in major activities as part of these projects, and getting them to talk through what's going to happen, what would happen if this happened, what are you going to do here? Does everyone understand what each other is actually undertaking? And and just every time you do that kind of thing, and you kind of put that additional communication in place, people learn and people understand, and people really appreciate kind of what's actually going on there. So building that ability to be able to plan properly, to communicate with all the different people, I guess is another kind of piece. And then the final piece, which we talked about quite a bit today, was culture. So just that kind of not just safety culture, but just kind of supportive organizational culture. If you have a culture where people are wanting to help other people, or wanting to see each other, other people succeed, wanting to kind of are able to displace maybe their own priority for kind of the overall good of what the organization is trying to do today, that sets you up so much more significantly to be able to succeed. Because then when the pressure comes on, and you start to kind of get those fatigues start kind of happens around you, if you've got people around you who are trying to help you succeed, as opposed to wanting to see you fail, then you've got a much greater chance of success. But that's not something you can put in place inside one of these events. It's something that's got to be there and be practiced ahead, and be kind of stable inside the organization.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about it all the time, don't we, Langdon? This thing of, we actually say stop talking about safety culture, because the danger is, if you've got safety culture, you've got people trying to build this safety culture over here. Actually, if that organizational piece that you're talking about is not there, safety culture is not going to work anyway, because there'll be a lack of trust, there'll be a lack of openness to sharing, and it's got to be the sort of the business culture that's in the right place if people are going to be successful.
Yeah, absolutely. If you don't have, it's not, yeah. If safety culture is tries to exist, if there's not an overall learning culture in an organization, an overall supporting culture in kind of other aspects, it's going to be doomed to failure, isn't it? Because it's just not going to sit right against where everything else is happening. And ultimately, I think safety culture and reliability culture and maintenance improvement culture are all really the same thing. They're about your ability to be able to learn from your failures properly and try and improve and to communicate properly and plan properly. They're all kind of fundamental about all that in all those aspects.
I loved you talking about the sort of rehearsals. I kind of got this image in my mind, almost like a ballet or an artistic thing, where you've got all, because if you think about it, you've got all these different people who could be almost competing with one another, couldn't they, with the different trades, the different parts of the process. And you've got to sort of almost have that rehearsal so that they can sink in at the right time in the right place to make the thing work effectively.
Absolutely. In terms of time lost and turnaround, it's generally people handing from one to another. So it's you don't have to rush to get these things done. You just need to make sure that somebody's always walking, somebody's always doing something, somebody doing the thing that they need to do. So, and that's all about just good quality communication, and making sure that everyone understands what's going on, doing that in a controlled way.
I didn't think we'd talk about ballet today, Matt. And I haven't been challenged to get the word ballet into the podcast as much as I can. Matt, it's been a fascinating conversation. I've really enjoyed it. I feel like I know a bit more about you. So when we're on our Sunday bike rides now, I'll I'll understand a bit more about your world, which should be great. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for sparing the time. I'm going to hand over to Langdon, who, in his inimitable style, will sign us off.
Thanks, Jules. And thanks, Matt. Very much appreciate the conversation. Look forward to hopefully being able to talk more. For listeners, we appreciate you joining. And as you're going about your days, as you're going through changes and processes, as you're going about changes, period, always remember to be detailed, to be focused, try to stay healthy and safe, and ultimately, watch each other's back out there. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Two Bald Guys Talking Safety. Don't forget to follow and subscribe wherever you stream your podcast, or you can visit us at evotix.com.
And if you've liked today's podcast or you found some value from it, we'd really appreciate it if you could head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review or a rating. It really means a lot to us. Thank you.